75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
And hello from the Flamingo Hotel in beautiful Monta, Nevada. This is Jerry Pippin. And we, of course, are busy with the UFO conference, the Congress going on here every year. And I have an interesting fellow to come up here in a minute that's going to talk to us. And his name is Bob Short, and he's a channeler. And I really don't know a lot about channeling, but we're going to find out all about it together. I just wanted to mention a couple of things before we get into the show. One thing about Bob, he goes back to George Adamski and all of the meetings out in the desert of California back in the 50s, and he has some great history to talk about as well. So I think you'll find the show very interesting, and he'll be over here in just a moment. And you'll find him a very, very interesting fellow. Now, the Alternatives Conference going on in Tennessee in September, we're coming up on a deadline here where if you want to get the tickets for half price, and on our website at jerrypippin.com, you have to do that before May 1st, you need to go over there and register. And just click on the A, and that's chauffeuring me around on the front, and you'll get to it. And this is an interesting conference in an alternative reality, simply because we're going to deal with some of my other favorite subjects, paranormal things. And as we get toward the fall, when this conference is going, our paranormal programs will be full bore again. We had to back off of those for several years because of personal reasons, but we're ready to start again on that as well, in addition to our UFO shows. And I think our guest today is kind of in between those. He's a little paranormal. He's a little spiritual. He's a real good guy. He's got a little UFO stuff in him, too. I think you'll find it out that you'll enjoy Bob Short. He'll be coming up next. Oh, by the way, if you can't register for that Alternative Reality Conference by May 1st, you can get him for 25% off if you do it between now and August 1st. Hey, it's a great day here in Laughlin, Nevada at the Flamingo Hotel, and here comes Bob Short, so we'll be right back.
River of Fear, the first book in a trilogy, contains just a few of the paranormal and UFO events that author Rod Davis and his wife have personally experienced. Rod surrounded them with mystery and action, which makes River of Fear a page-turner and an exciting read. River of Fear is a book you do not put down. Click on the link on our UFO page at jerrypippin.com for more about River of Fear, and you can buy it today for only $14.95. That's a savings of $5. River of Fear, reality fiction at its best.
If you're looking for adventure, information, and entertainment on the internet, one stop fits all, jerrypippin.com. At jerrypippin.com, you'll find multimedia entertainment at its best. Almost 2 million people are enjoying hours of entertainment and information. Get it now. www.jerrypippin.com.
It's a big, bold story set in the heartland of America, along the edge of Lonely Mountain.
I am open for business.
And so Big William Gorgon, played by handsome Michael James, fiercely set down his Midwest roots.
Oh, darling, we're going to sell bathrobes and raise chickens.
Set as adoring wife Wilhelmina, portrayed by beautiful Glenda Olson.
Oh, I love our store, Will.
But they hadn't counted on Big Ralph's bathrobes and cattle store coming to town.
Oh, Will, Will, what will we do, Will?
Will had a plan, a way of facing off against tough Big Ralph.
We're going to change the face of America. We're going to advertise.
Adver what?
With print and broadcasting and bus benches. We're going to tell people who we are and where we are.
What's a bus?
And so the story of how one man brought advertising to the heartland.
Oh, Will, Will it work?
It will. And my name ain't Will, Philomena. You gotta advertise or we'll die.
And so the greatest marketing story of all time is here. Advertise or Die, Dopey. Brought to you by Adweek Magazine, the Radio Advertising Bureau, this radio station on the famous Radio Ranch.
This is Jerry Pippin. Welcome to the UFO Files. This hour we're going to deal with something a little different, channeling. So we're going to talk to a man who has some interesting stories to tell, and I think you'll enjoy him. He's from Sedona, Arizona. His name is Bob Short. First of all, welcome to our show, and we are here, of course, every day at this time. And be sure and tell your friends about our show. We had over 2 million listeners and 2003, and we're looking to triple that this year. So things are going along pretty good. If you want to check our website out, you can do that as well at jerrypippin.com. JerryPippin. P as in Paul. Bob, how are you?
Pretty good, Jerry. How are you?
You're here at the conference, the UFO conference, 13th annual one.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I've been to almost every one of these, you know. In fact, this year we thought we were going to come. And then, surprisingly, I think our friends upstairs decided that we were, because the hotel sent us a special deal that I just couldn't pass up. So I said, well, I guess they want us to be there.
Yeah, it was destined.
It sure was.
Now, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about channeling in general before we get into some of the other stories about it. And I understand from several friends that we'll be not short of any stories with you tonight.
That's right, yeah.
Pardon the pun on words, since your name is Bob Short.
I've had a lot of experiences because I've been in this field, Jerry, for almost over 50 years. So I was in on the very first...
You started when you were 3.
That's good. I really started back in the 1950s. I was in on the first ham radio communications out of Winslow, Arizona, even though the book that came out called The Saucers Speak, George Hunt Williamson and a number of other people were there. Among other things, we were told how to look up George Adamski, who, you know, by now is very famous. He's one of the very first UFO contactees probably in the world in our present day. But anyway, from there...
Did you actually make contact with George Adamski?
Yes, we did. I'm talking about a source of extraterrestrial intelligence, that he lived in Oceanside, California. He had an outfit called the Royal Society of Tibet, and he was teaching, among other things, mental telepathy. And I'll tell you something. My wife and I, were both witnesses to his fantastic ability, because he really was good at it. And he could also pick up when individuals were thinking about certain things, and we were witness to that, too. We saw him carry out certain things, which I thought was absolutely astounding. But anyway, we made contact with him, and later on he moved to Mount Palomar, the Palomar Gardens, which had a lady by the name of Alice Wells had a cafe there, and he lived behind it. And one time I was visiting there, believe it or not, and these two gentlemen came walking in. I had asked whether these people have names, and he kind of was, I don't know whether he was amused or what, but he sort of acted like, well, not really, but he kind of looked with a smile on his face as though to say, well, they really do, but they, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not going to. But anyway, these two gentlemen, he kind of looked at him and nodded his head, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, wow, there's some of their own, you know, see. I didn't walk up to him and say, hi, how are you? I'm so, you know, because I thought, no, you know, not with other people in the room, you don't do that, so, you know, it's, you know. But anyway,
The thing that I remember about George Adamski is one of the first things that I have associated with was some flying saucer, one of the original ones, I guess, picture of a flying saucer that he either drew or took or something.
No, he took photographs through a Schmidt telescope and really fantastic photographs. I mean, Even though there's a lot of controversy, a lot of people thought, oh yeah, well, it's a lampshade or it's a chicken coop. It's some kind of a chicken thing or something. They tried to claim that's what it was. It really wasn't. This thing was absolutely a spaceship. It was called a bell ship because it looked like a bell, and it had a magnetic grid plate on the bottom of it. It had three condenser balls. It had an armature that went through the middle of it. It was really an incredible thing. There was a book later on published by a gentleman by the name of Leonard Crapp out of England called Space Gravity and the Flying Saucer, and in it he did a diagram, like a cutaway diagram of one of these ships, and it was exactly what a damn good. And as a matter of fact, when George was at Giant Rock, California, now that's out in the high desert country of Southern California above Palm Springs, and
I have a friend that lives up there, and they had a circular building or something up there.
It was called the Round House. I wish I could recall the name of the guy that used to live there, but he was a friend of the Van Tassels. George Van Tassel was the owner-operator of that outfit of Giant Rock, California, 33 acres all told, and he used to hold fantastic UFO conventions there that pulled in 10,000 to 12,000 people. Over the years, the first one was in 1954, the first convention, and Daniel W. Fry, who turned out to be an electrical engineer and contractor, who, by the way, built a certain pipeline for usage at White Sands Proving Ground near Alamogordo, and it never broke down. Some of the other ones did, but his never broke down. He was contacted while he was there, but anyway, he was the speaker at the very first convention. And they used to have other speakers there, Orfeo Angelusi, who had experiences in Los Angeles with UFO occupants, Truman Bethrum, who had experiences in Mormon Mesa, called aboard a spaceship or a flying saucer, or something to that effect. There were many, many individuals that appeared there. Bruce Cathy out of Australia, who was fantastic at grid points and nodal points and all that sort of thing. He was an airline pilot, but anyway, it was just incredible, and they had many, many appearances of spaceships. As a matter of fact, while I was there, this is where my first experience took place there at Giant Rock, where I found out I could channel. I didn't know that I could do this, and while I was there, I was told to go there. As a matter of fact, I was told to.
Now, when you say you were told, Bob,
by extraterrestrial sources, Jerry.
What is that like? Is it just a voice or just an idea? Or what?
Well, no. I'll tell you what I did. After hand radio contact, we were told that we were going to have to develop a different method of communication with them because we were surely going to be shut down. Well, as it was, the government came along and said, "No, you can't do this. This is against the law because you're operating and communicating with alien intelligence unknown to the United States government, which is against the law." And believe it or not,
I didn't realize that.
That's right. It's in the FCC handbook. And the fellow, Lyman Streeter, who was the ham radio operator, and he was also a key telegraph operator for Santa Fe Railway up in Winslow. That's where, you know, I would go up whenever the weather wasn't bad, whenever I could get there, however I could get there. Sat in on these. It was just absolutely incredible. One particular time, we were standing outside the ham shack and we were watching these UFOs flying around overhead, anywhere from 300 feet to 1,500 feet up, and we're just like, gee whiz, wow, look at that, you know. But anyway, we could hear the voice coming through the speaker, and it was very loud. I felt sorry for Lyman because I thought he had to hold his ears because it was like, hello, how are you, you know, that sort of thing. And so we were standing out there, and we walked back inside, and Lyman was sitting there, and he was rocking back and forth and going, oh, my God. And I thought he was sick, and I said, Lyman, are you all right? Are you sick, or what is it? He goes, no. He said, I wonder why they bothered with me. I'm just a lowly ham radio operator, key telegraph operator here. I don't understand. Why are they getting in touch with me? You know? He says, now I know. Oh, my God. Now he says, you know, I said, well, what did they say? And they said, you are in our records, our brother, surprised. And he goes, what records? They said, you are in our records. The name is Kanett, K-A-N-N-E-T-T. The name is Kanett, K-A-N-N-E-T-T. And he was just like, and they said, You have been incarnated here for us to get in touch with you at this time, because this information needs to reach your populace to know what's going on. And he was just like, huh, what? You know, and anyway, from there, I lived in North Hollywood, California, out in San Fernando Valley.
Now, you had no idea that you would end up channeling at this point.
No, I did not.
You probably had no idea what it was.
No, I didn't. I really had never heard of it. Anyway, so where I was living, I decided to take this five-cell flashlight and go outside with it at night and see what would happen. And then I thought to myself, now, this is ridiculous. What are you doing? This isn't going to be seen by anybody in less than a third of a mile or something like that. And then I got to thinking, in the service, you're told, never light a cigarette outside an enemy territory, because from 5 miles up, they can see this. And I thought, oh, yeah. So anyway, I was flashing code at it, you know, that we were given. We were given a certain code to contact them with by using Morse code.
When you say we were given, who gave that to you?
I'm sorry, Space Intelligence, you know, extraterrestrial intelligence, told us how to use this code. So I thought, well, I'll use it. And believe it or not, Jerry, these white orb-like objects start flying across the night sky, all different directions, parallel. I mean, horizontally, not vertically, like a falling star, whatever. And I thought, oh my goodness. Well, what do I do now? So I asked some friends of mine that I thought would know something. And they said, do you ever try automatic writing? And I said, what the heck is that? They said, well, you know, you sit down, and they explained the whole process. And I thought,
automatic writing.
Yeah. I thought, what? So anyway, I thought, well.
How does that work? You just kind of get the signals and you write it out automatically, or what?
What you do is that you sort of, I turned the light on where I could just see enough to see where I can hold a piece of paper in my hand with a pencil. And they said, that's what to do. And anyway, after a number of weeks, after I went through quite a deal, I mean, to make contact, okay, I won't go into all of the particulars. Anyway, it was scary at first, but anyway, finally the pencil began to move, you know, my hand, and
on your own. I mean, you had nothing to do with it.
That's right, I had nothing to do with it. And I'll tell you something, sometimes if going for 2 hours and I never put my arm down or my hand down, and I thought, why isn't my hand or my arm painful? It doesn't feel anything. And I thought, how is this happening? So anyway, I couldn't question it. I thought, well, it's happening, okay. So in that doing that, the intelligence told me that they needed me to go out to Giant Rock, or the Big Rock. They call it the Big Rock in the desert, if I wanted to know more about them. I said, where is it? Where is it located? They wouldn't tell me. They wouldn't tell me. And I thought, well, you know, I was very, very puzzled. In the meantime, where my mother worked at in a restaurant, James Cagney's personal secretary, Nora Helms, came in there and started talking to her, and by this time I had Adamski's book. I used to carry it around like a Bible, okay, and I'd lay it down where people could see it, and I thought, they'll talk to me if they see this, see? Anyway, so this lady said she had been out to this Big Rock, and there was a man underneath it that talked to Space Intelligence, and I said to my mother, where? Well, where is it? Where is it? Tell me where. She said it was in the 29 Palms area. I said, okay. So I got a map, and I looked, and I found 29 Palms, but it didn't tell me about any Big Rock. So anyway, I thought, okay, smart guys, you're going to show me how to get there, right? You're going to show me how to get there. I'm going to put you to the test, okay? And by gosh, Jerry, they certainly did. They absolutely did.
How'd they show you? I mean, they just have a mental...
They directed me mentally, I guess. I got out to the town called Joshua Tree, and I thought I'd stop.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, and I thought I'd stop and get some gas. We later on ended up living there. But anyway, I stopped at this 76 station to get gas at the time. This is now a real estate office. But anyhow, the guy says, well, you just made it. I was about ready to close up. And so I said to this guy where he was putting gas on, because... could you tell me where I could find this Big Rock? And he looked at me with this kind of foolish grin on his face. He says, yeah, buddy. He said, take a look around. They're all over the place, you know. And I thought, ask a dumb question to get a dumb answer. So anyhow, I pulled out of the driveway, and I started going on down toward 29 Palms. I said, now, if I'm supposed to pull off this highway, I said, I'm talking about space intelligence, you show me where to do this. Okay. I got about five blocks down the highway, and they said, I heard this voice very loudly in my head say, turn left. I said, what? Turn left. I said, what? Turn left. And I went, oh, okay. So I turned, and I found myself on a paved street. And I started heading out. I don't know where it was going. And I was heading out. And I finally got to a point where the pavement stopped, and it was all dirt. And I could see these lights out, like there must have been a few homes out there. And I started going on down, and I stopped finally. I said, well, what now? And I got nothing. I said, what? Come on, what? Nothing. So I thought, well, I'm going to keep on going here. Evidently, you wanted me to go this way. So and then I got to thinking, you know something? If your car breaks down out here, and I had an old Hudson Terror plane.
I remember those.
Oh, yeah, it was an old car. So, but it had it was a wonderful little car, but, you know, it could have broken down. And I thought, you know, you'd get out here and you'll bake in this sun. I said, you know, if you don't have any, well, I did have some water, a little food with me and some blankets to, you know, that's what I plan on doing. So, believe it or not, I kept right on. Finally, I got to where the road sort of curved, and I stopped then, and I said, now which way do you want me to go? And they said, take the road to the right. I said, you sure? Take the road to the right. Fine, take the road to the right. And I said, oh, okay. So I started, and pretty soon it curved around, and it finally ended up on kind of a gravel-like road, and I looked off in the distance, and there was a light there, you know, there was some kind of a light. And I said, well, I'll just go toward where that light is and, you know, see what happens. Well, you know, I didn't think about it at the time, Jerry. This was out in the desert at night. That light could have been 50 miles away from me. I wouldn't have known it, and the gas would have run out. But anyway, I finally wound up where this great big huge boulder painted white with a windsock and a light bulb and sitting on the top of this rock, put into it. And I saw this other great big huge boulder. It looked like about seven stories high. And I said, where in the world am I? Where am I? And I saw this building. It said, come on in. And I thought, oh, that looks inviting. I said, well, what I'll do, I'll get out. Now, this was at night. Everything was closed up. It was all dark, you know, except for the light on the boulder. So I said, well, I'll get out, and I'll walk around a little bit, take some food and water, and curl up in my blankets or whatever it is, and get up in the morning, go in there and get my bearings and find out where to get gas and be on my way. So that's what I did. I walked in, and here's this great big, the next morning, I walked in, this great big raw bone woman said, good morning, how are you this morning? I said, well, I'm fine. She said, are you hungry? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, do you want something to eat? I said, well, yeah. She says, well? And I said, well, what do you got? She said, we have ham and eggs, bacon and eggs, toast and coffee. She said, and potatoes. She said, well, what do you want? I said, well, I'll have a couple eggs, I guess, and some coffee and potatoes. She said, all right. So she started cooking it up and poured my coffee for me. So after I did that, I said, do you know where, by the way, where I can find this big, this place, and I was sort of mumbling, and she goes, what are you trying to say? And I said, well, I'm trying to find this location. There's a place out here. And she said, again, what are you trying to say? And I said, could you tell me where I could find this big rock in the desert? She looked at me rather bemused, and she said, well, yes, I think I can. And I said, well, where is it? She said, it's called Giant Rock, and that's where you are. And I said, what? Oh, my God, nobody's going to believe this. You're kidding. Nobody's going to. She said, why? What? Why? What? You know? And I said, well, and then I started explaining it, and I said, you know where I could find this man that is supposed to talk to? Well, you know, there's some people that this guy is in touch with, you know. And she said, again, what is it you're trying to tell me? And finally, I said, well, there's a man that says he talks to space intelligence under a big rock here, you see. And so she said, yes, I think I know who that is. And in the meantime, this man had walked into the shop, into the coffee shop, sat on this little low seat across the room. She took him some coffee, came back, and she said, well, there he is right over there. That's Mr. George Van Tassel, my husband. And I said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. She goes, what? No, I said, well, I've got these writings. Could I show them to him? He says, well, I think he would. Yeah. You know, so anyway, I went over and I asked him, Mr. Van Tassel. He said, yeah. I said, well, I'm Robert Short, and I'm from North Hollywood. Okay, fine. I said, I've got these writings out in the car. I said, would you mind looking at them for me? Would you do that for me? And he goes, well, yeah, I guess. So he's very, pragmatic man. He used to work for Howard Hughes. And, oh, yeah, the guy was an aircraft engineer and so forth. Anyway, so I went out and I got him and I handed it to him. He started looking through. He goes, yeah. He said, well, looks like the real thing to me. You know, and I went, oh, thank God. I'm not crazy. Oh, my God, you know. See, so anyway, he said, by the way, tonight we're having a session. If you'd care to be here around 8 o'clock, he said, we have the session underneath the rock down there. And I thought, oh, man, I'm going to see space intelligence. Oh, man, I'm going to see space. Whoa. You know, I was really jumping. Yeah, I was really excited. So anyway, we get down there, see. Now, boy, people showed up from all over. People flew in. It was an airport out there, Giant Rock Airport. Okay, there was, people, there must have been 50, 60 people there. And I thought, my God, you know. So anyway, they were all down in this room, and they were all sitting on benches and everything, you know. So I sat on the steps going down to the room, and anyhow, they had the first session, and I was looking for space intelligence, but I didn't see any. And Mrs. Van Tassel says, when we got they turned the lights off, they turned the generator off and ran everything on batteries. All the tape recorders and everything, their daughters did it for him. And so anyhow, I'm sitting there, and pretty soon Mrs. Van Tassel says, well, now we're going to sing some songs. And I thought, oh, wait a minute, uh-oh. She said,
probably thought it was a revival.
I thought, yeah, I did. I thought, oh, my God, it's a religious cult. Oh, my God. What did I get into, see? So anyway, she said, we're going to sing for I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles. And I thought, what? You know, some religion. I never heard of it, you know. So anyway, then, you know, she got down and said, now we're going to say some alms. And I thought, oh, man, it really is. It's a religious call. Oh, my God. You know, so then she explained it. She said, well, now the reason we did all this was to raise the vibrations. Raise the vibrations in this room, you see. And I thought, okay, well, when in Rome, do what the Romans do, see. So I said, okay. So anyway, then it got silent. It got very quiet. And all of a sudden, this Van Tassel sitting in the corner in a big overstuffed chair says, are we ready to start here? Who's this guy, Newt, that's coming in here? And I thought, Newt? Who's he talking to? Who is he talking to? Because I was looking for space intelligence. You know, I didn't know he was channeling, you know, see, never heard of it. So anyway, all of a sudden, out of his voice says, and this voice comes out of him and said, greetings from the realms of Blea, from the satellite Sherry, I am Contamara. You know, and I went, holy cats, oh my God, what is this? Oh my God, you know, see. And so anyway, he gives a message, you see. And while he's sitting there doing that, see, soon my arm, Jerry, starts shaking. Yeah. I mean, like it used to do.
Yeah, like you have palsy.
Like I had palsy. And then my body was shaking, just like, and I thought, stop this, you're doing this, stop it. This is ridiculous, stop it, to myself quietly, you know, and it didn't. And it felt like a motor going right up and down my back, and I got warmer on my head like a band. Bam, I was out of it, Jerry, just out of it. Boom. That's the last thing I remembered. The next thing I know, the lights are on, and all these people are looking at me with their mouths hanging open, you know. And I said to Mrs. Van Tassel, I said, oh, gee, I'm sorry, Mrs. Van Tassel. I must have fallen asleep here. I said, this is the desert, and, you know, it was a long drive out here, everything else. He said, fall asleep, my fanny. He said, how do they push a voice like that to a set of vocal cords? And I said, what? What are you talking about? He says, didn't you hear it? And I said, hear what? I didn't hear anything, you know. He says, you didn't? He said, well, that voice come out of you and thank the people for being there, that they needed to be there and they needed to hear this. He said, and then he signed off, you know. And I said, well, what? I said, are you kidding me? He goes, well, why would I kid you? You know, see. I said, well, what did he say? Who did he say he was? What? And I said, well, did he have any identity? He said, well, yeah, the name sounded like Junal, Jonal, or something like that. I said, could it have been Jonal? And he goes, yeah, that could have been it. And I said, oh, my God, because, Jerry, that was the name that was given me in my writing. And I thought, oh, my God, oh, my God.
You mean literally the pen almost drove itself and wrote this name out. You went out there, and all of a sudden you met this famous guy and you followed you back in the 50s, and the next thing you know, you're a Chandler.
That's right.
This is Jerry Pippin, and this is, of course, the UFO Files, and we're talking to Bob Short, and he's a Chandler. We're going to find out a little bit more about that. Anybody here have a question about channeling you'd like to ask Bob? If you do, come right up to the microphone, and we'll do that. Bob, let's get into this a little bit and explain to the listeners what this is all about.
Yeah. Well, what they call it channeling. It basically, you know, channel is like a frequency. It's a method of communication where basically it is perhaps a little limited in the scope because it's beamed to one individual at a time. Or it can be opened up and beamed to a set of individuals, more than one at a time. They use a translator device. As a matter of fact, Philip J. Corso, Colonel Philip J. Corso, wrote the book the day after Roswell. He had gone on the ship that crashed at Roswell with his assistants and had taken off some technical mechanical apparatus, and he hid it very well. He had loyal people that never revealed that they had this. And among other things, they had a translator, okay, that was put over the head. This translator...
Now, wait a minute. When it's put over the head, you mean it's like a helmet or something?
It fits over the head like we would do a set of earphones, okay, but it's a translator. It has things built into it that basically can translate all known languages like they do at the UN. It's okay. like at the UN, okay? And they're able to communicate with this device and so forth, and they use a beam... called a tensor beam, T-E-N-S-O-R. It's basically, we have an explanation of how it's done, but ostensibly what it does, it creates an individual, makes of an individual a light translator. It's called traducer lumina. Okay, that's the
name. You want to say that again?
Traducer lumina. That's the name they give it, and I thought, that sounds like, it could be French or Latin, or maybe it's one of their own language. I don't know. I said, well, I'm going to look in the dictionary and find out see if there's any explanation of this. I looked in there, and by God, it's in the dictionary. Traducer is French. It means one who goes before, one who crosses over, or basically a translator. That's what it means. It's like traducere in Italian. It comes from Latin, you know, to communicate. Well, anyway, it means a light translator. And I said, well, that's wonderful. I'm a light translator. Is that what it is? You know. And over the many years, I've been communicating. And just recently, in November of this last year, they went all over the world, and they gave a world report on all the weather fronts and what was going to happen and all of the seismic activity that was going to happen. And within a week of the time that we received this sort of thing, the things began to happen, and all your weather that you've seen in the United States and across the world, and the seismic activity that I'm getting on my email is certainly verifying every bit of what's in my latest newsletter. Okay, and it's...
And for our listeners, is this newsletter available to the public, or how do you do this?
This is available by subscription. I do give them out. I've given some out here at the UFO Congress Convention in Laughlin, Nevada.
Okay, on our website at jerrypippin.com, we do have information if you'd like to subscribe to Bob Short's newsletter, so we'll check into that.
Yeah, it's. I have a brochure that I put out that tells people how to do that. And they've given this information that from time to time, over many, many years, we get this report about every quarter, or on a quarterly basis. They give us a world report, and they also give us information about where they're going to be seen or how many. I have a book out. It's called Out of the Stars, A Message from Extraterrestrial Intelligence. I don't mean to sound like I'm trying to, you know, push something, but it is a compilation of some of the experiences.
Well, it sounds like an interesting book. Is it available?
Yes, it is. It is certainly available. I won't give the price of it. That's something that you can, if you want to, you can get it.
It'll be through us. We'll steer them to you, too.
Yeah. And anyhow, I'm working on a sequel to that. It'll be called Out of the Stars, Volume 2, Extraterrestrial Intelligence on Tour, because through the years when we would go on tour through the states, they actually would follow us, Jerry, and put on demonstrations that would literally boggle your mind. One time when we were up in Montrose, Colorado, we were staying at the home of Mr. and Mrs. Leonard Tokel. He used to be the former probation officer for that county. And while we were standing out in this huge pasture in the evening with Major Wayne Ah, who was retired from the Army Intelligence, and he had a group called New Age Foundation, and he had all of these young people there and so forth, and my wife and myself and our children were there. Well, we were standing out holding hands in this back pasture, and my sources, my extraterrestrial sources, began to channel through me and say, and they actually brought up a carrier ship, a carrier craft, a large carrier craft from the horizon, okay, and said, now we're going to light up our ship, okay, brighter, 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 and by the time that they did this, the whole back pasture lit up like broad daylight. And all these kids were going, hallelujah, praise the Lord, hallelujah, praise the Lord, you know, see? And then he said, now we're going to dim our lights back down again, dimmer, 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 out. And it dropped below the horizon again. And I'm telling you, Jerry, I was down, my wife can tell you, I was down on the ground in the grass crying like a baby. I never had anything like that. I mean, that was just...
Were you overcome with emotion or fear or what?
No, I was overcome with emotion. I really was. And I'll tell you, now, harking back to the earlier period, in the 50s, in 1958, I was taking a walk out of a place I was staying in Paradise Valley between Yucca Valley and Joshua Tree. Anyway, while I did, this object came down. I thought it was going to hit me or something. I felt like running, but anyway, it went off to one side of me, about, I'd say, maybe a football field length away from me, and started looking like a falling star, like they call it slipping gravity, I found out, and came down and hovered above the desert floor, and finally happened, I saw this hatch open up on it. Now, listen, I had already made contact with these people and everything else, but this was unexpected, and it was so startling that I was very much afraid. My legs were shaking. I thought I was going to fall down.
What size craft was this? Was it big?
It was one of these bell-type craft. That I'd say maybe about 35. I have to estimate this, Jerry, because I don't know. You know, you don't have a measuring stick to get out. But it looked like something like a Damsky ship. But anyway, I'd say, just guessing, it was about maybe 35 feet in diameter and about maybe 20 feet high, okay? But anyhow, it was pretty large, I mean, from looking at it, from what I could see and what light there was at night. And this hatch opened up on it, and then that really scared me. That really did. I used to get very upset whenever I'd talk about this, because I thought, you know, I said, oh, my God, they're going to take me away. I'll never get home. I'll never get back here. See, I got very emotional about it. I was scared, you know. And so all of a sudden I saw this being come across the roadway toward me and got within arm's reach of me, and all of a sudden I realized, oh my God, oh God, I'm looking at somebody from, I was thinking this, like, I'm looking at somebody from another world, oh my God, you know. So I put my hand out, sort of shake hands with him, saying, you know, I'm friendly, you know. Jerry, he did something I'll never forget for the rest of my life. He put his hand over where our heart would be and swept his hand outward as though to say, everything that's happening to you, everything that you see, is open to you. And all the questions I had, everything that I had, my mind was just a jumble.
What did this being look like exactly?
He had very high cheekbones, from what I could tell. I mean, it was, you know, he had very high cheekbones. Almost looked like some Indians I've seen in South America, okay? His eyes were further apart from his nose, from what I could gather, from what I could see. And his hair was down to his shoulders and lightly blowing in whatever breeze there was. And he looked like he was looking right through me. I mean, really, just very penetrating, you know, as though he knew everything about me from the get-go, from the time I was born or whatever. And I didn't hear his mouth move, but I heard him say, we have come down to make an adjustment in the power of our craft. we will see you at a future time. And I thought, you know, and then he stood there for maybe a minute or so and turned about, never looked around. I thought, that's it? That's it. And all of a sudden I was thinking, well, don't leave me here, God. Don't leave me. Take me with you. God, take me with you. You know, see? And he didn't turn around. He just kept. But the funny part is when he reached the edge of the roadway, I thought I would hear this, just like coming toward me. I thought I would hear like creosote, you know, crackle and everything else. And no noise at all. I thought, huh? Why don't I hear anything? You know, footsteps or, you know, see? But when he came into the roadway, I could hear his footsteps crunching, you know, the roadbed material, you know, as though he was a little heavier than we are, okay. But he was humanoid. I mean, absolutely humanoid, you know, see. And not too bad looking at all. In fact, there was a lady that lived in Joshua Tree who used to do the front cover of the Rosicrucian magazine for many years. And she had an experience where she one evening went out to rest at the side of the house because it was too hot in the house to sleep during the summer. And her radio was snapping and crackling and making all kinds of funny noises. And she thought she heard some kind of a disturbance at the front of her house, and she walked around to see what it was. And here was this being standing there, and she said, can I help you? Were you looking for someone? She said, then he turned around, and he was still glowing. Still glowing. And he said, yes, you. And she had blankets and a flashlight in her hand. She went right down, passed right out. She drew a picture of him. She was an artist. And she said, do you know this person? Jerry, I literally just freaked out. I said, do I know who he is? I said, you damn right I know.
Was it the same guy?
The same guy, you know. And this was at a different year. It wasn't the same year. And I thought, my God, how is this possible? See? Anyway, so that confirmed it for me. See, I thought, well, I'm not the only person. See?
We were talking with Bob Short here, and we're talking about channeling. This is Jerry Pippen. You're listening to the Jerry Pippen UFO Files. And, Bob, we have a few people here around the table. Somebody wanted to ask you, basically, on channeling, is it possible to channel it at your will, or do you have to wait?
Well, basically, I developed this. I mean, it's not like anyone else did, and however they did it, but... I have to go into an altered state. I place myself into an altered state. Many people who witness things, they'll say to my wife, is he okay? Is he all right? Because they say that I really go through quite a thing for a certain short period of time, and they can hear this odd clicking noise in my throat.
Literally, huh?
Yeah, it's just like some kind of a funny noise. My wife knows what it is. She says, you know, and we finally found out what that was. It's an adjustment in the vocal cords. It's an adjustment in the voice box so that they can line up the frequency rate and so forth. And sometimes they'll go, and you are, and this in between. And they say, well, what's this in between the words? And I said, for a long time I didn't know. And I said, well, I'm going to ask. So we found out. See, I don't do anything to alter anything. And what it is, it's like you have highs and lows in frequency rates of any kind of speech or communication. If you watch an oscilloscope, you can see this. You can see when you're talking, you know, on a microphone and so forth, you know, and so forth. Well, that's what it is. It's like, and you are, so forth, see?
And I actually had a channeler in a studio one time with me in Las Vegas at KVEG, and it took me about 10 minutes to get into this trance, but he became ashen-faced. And,
exactly.
I did hear the click.
Yeah, right, exactly. And
so I don't imagine we have time to do it today.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do it here. But
we're talking with Bob Short, and let's get into a little bit about this channeling. Do you always have the same individual?
In the outset, no, I didn't. It was sort of, I would get places like Andromeda, you know, throughout from Andromeda, and it was funny. When Devere from Israel yesterday had this young man that was showing how he communicates, the same thing, channeling.
Yeah.
It was like...
Yeah, the ETs, the doctors.
Yeah, and anyway, but they have, in the outset, when we begin the communication, it's like, this is the voice of Instruct Relay Automatic, but sometimes this is the voice of Instruct Relay Automatic. We have information for these individuals, this time period, you know, real speed it up. you know, see? And this guy yesterday was going like this and so forth, you know, and I said, I know what that is. I started almost crying. I go, oh, God, I know what that is. Oh, God, I know what that is, you know, see? And because basically that can happen. If they speed it up, that's what it sounds like. It comes in very speeded up. But what happens when it comes into the pons region in the back of your brain back here in the medulla oblongata, it translates, it slows it down, and basically so that you can understand what's being said so that people can hear it.
Okay. Well, it's like when we feed things by computer, the bit rate may be really fast for an hour chauffeur, and it takes 15 minutes for me to send it to the network. And then they slow it back down. So that's what your brain's doing.
That's exactly right. Absolutely correct. You know, I mean, it's been many years finding all this stuff, you know, how this does and how that does. But that's really correct. And it's absolutely amazing. As a matter of fact, when we used to record this on different recorders, like a woolen sack, where you had a three-quarter, you could...
I'm familiar with that, right, right.
Yeah, three-quarters or a half, whatever it is, or seven-eighths. Okay, you'll get like this, and you'll get like birds, you know. And I said, oh, my God. I said, if they speed this up or slow it down, they can talk to the animal kingdom. I said, they can really literally do this, you know, see. And I said, wow, is that incredible? You know, through channeling, you know, it's channeling to animals they can do this, you know, see. And, you know, it's make the animals understand what they're doing or saying, you know. And it's the same thing with a human being, you know. They can change the various frequency rates and whatever, you see, to do this sort of thing. Channeling is just a name that's been given to it, you know. We can call ourselves experiencers also, but they call experiencers, you know. And they have done consultations with people all over the world. As a matter of fact, Oswald White Bear Fredericks, very famous individual who wrote the Book of the Hopi. Brad Steiger, a very, very famous author, has done readings with me. Believe it or not, the gentleman who heads up the Department of Antiquities at Giza, the Cairo University, over in Egypt, back in a number of years ago, he had a reading for me. As a matter of fact, when he walked in, I'd already started my communications or my channeling in Santa Barbara, California, during a convention in Santa Barbara. And about halfway through this thing, he comes walking, and he's Arabic, okay? And he comes walking through the door, and my source, my extraterrestrial, stopped what he was doing with the rest of these people that were in the room, that were all the speakers attending the convention, that they told me I just had to do this thing for him. It was very important. Anyway, they stopped what they were doing, and they began to speak to this gentleman in Arabic for 5 minutes. Now, I don't speak Arabic. I can say, you know, salam alaikum, you know, I can say that, or alaikum salam. I can do that, but I don't know, you know.
So you actually communicated with him in Arabic.
That's right. They communicated with him in Arabic. Now, we have a friend of ours, a lady that lives down in Tucson, Arizona. Now, her father was a German scientist that worked at the Montauk Project, and she knows German, and they spoke to her in German, okay? I mean, they do this, and it just flabbergasts me because I don't speak a lot of this, you know, see? But I found out, well, I'm not the only individual doing this throughout the world. There are people in Australia. There's another one in Greece. There's people all over the world that do this just like I do. Perhaps they approach it in a different manner, but it's the same thing. And they get information, okay?
We're talking with Bob Short. We're talking about channeling. And, Bob, the thing that I would like to find out from you is now that you've been doing this for a while, do you always have the same entity that you connect with, or do you know?
Yes, I do now. I do now. But at the time, I did not. And when they said, we will see you in a future time, I found out later on that basically they had taken me on board the ship that night, but they blocked it out because they said, you have a habit of learning information and then immediately giving it out to everybody and his uncle, you know, more or less to speak. In other words, we had to block it out because we didn't want you to disrupt the plan that was underway. In other words, we wanted to, you know, let's say program you so that you would give it out in a certain manner. Yeah, and anyway, so anyhow, They took me on board, did this programming, and later they opened it up, in other words, so that basically I would know what I was doing, you know, because they said, you do have a habit of being very friendly with people and talking to everybody, and he said, you're liable to give the whole thing away and let everybody know what you can see beforehand, before we're ready for this, see? So I do not have one source. I do have one source.
Can you tell me anything about that source?
He is a gentleman that lives in a parallel solar system, parallel to our own. It's called Ceylon 3 Coal Dust. Now, there's a gentleman, Wendell Stevens, who's here at the convention, that wrote a book. He put a book together based upon information that was given to him by an individual, actually, who dwelt with these individuals, or at least had contact with them, called UFO Contact from Coal Dust. KOLDAS in our English equivalents, okay? And I come to find out that it was done from a book called The 12 Planets Speak. There's people in South Africa who also are in communication with this source. In 1991, was when I was at a UFO Congress thing in Las Vegas, this gentleman threw a slide up on a transparency thing on the screen. It was some space writing. Well, I so happens in my writing, I did have the same thing. It was, and I saw it, and my wife will tell you, I literally freaked out in the audience. I almost disrupted the whole thing, and she told me to be quiet down and so forth and ask him afterward what it was all about. Show him what you have and see what he says. Well, I did that, it turned out, he said, well, he said, no doubt about it, you're in contact with the same people we are, and they're in South Africa, okay? And I was just... thank God, now I know who they are. Now I know who they are. Oh, my God. You know, see? So anyway, and I tried to tell her this book when I read it. It was one of the few books that basically I'm able to get into, and I recognized it, absolutely recognized it. And so I know that that's where they're in a parallel solar system to ours. They've given this and verified it, and they come through with a so-called time barrier. They're able to do that. They're able to travel back and forth through that time barrier. Now, there have been times of magnetic storms in our system out there, and it locks them out. If they get in here, they're trapped sometimes. They can't get out. It may take years for them to get back home, see? You know, years in our time. They say to them, we are the past. To us, they are the future. And that's why they can look about 35 to 38 years old and guess how old they are.
They could be
probably 300 to 400 years old, and you wouldn't.
So basically, when you say they're in a parallel universe, but they are from somewhere too, somewhere else.
Yeah, there's. In fact, we now do know, and it's been Richard Hoagland has done a great deal of work on it, and bless his heart, to bring out the fact that our planets in our own solar system are inhabited. They have bases underground. Just like they have underground tunnels and bases here on our Earth, but they have those bases on the Moon, the backside of the Moon, Luna Base 3, and they have other installations on Mars and Venus and so on. So they have a satellite out at the end of our solar system beyond Pluto called Melkor in our English equivalent, M-E-L-C-H-O-R, Melkor. And any individuals that are visiting our solar system from elsewhere, as long as they're friendly, are invited to make use of that satellite and so forth. And Duncan Lunan, many years ago, picked up an orbiting device that was sending out rebroadcasting television patterns back to us years after they'd gone offline, okay? And so they know that, my God, that can't be possible. So they know there's somebody out there doing this. Of course, they try to say, oh, now, come on, you know, you're probably setting something up and creating things and blah, 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 you know, how they do. They just don't want to believe that these things are possible, see?
Mm-hmm. You have a very interesting point there. Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left here. Your newsletter, if they'd like to subscribe to it, they can find the information on our website, and also maybe you have an address they could contact. I don't know.
Yes, my address is Blue Rose Ministry, P.O. Box 3332. Cornville, C-O-R-N-V as in Victor, I-L-L-E, Arizona, 86325. Okay, or they can contact me through our website, which is www.allthingsangels.com. Email is blurose at wildapache.net.
Now, for the people listening on the radio, if you didn't get a chance to get all of that, just go to our website, jerrypippin.com, click on the neon alien on the front, the little ET, and you'll go over and you'll see the part about Bob Short. In fact, this radio show will be posted there as well, and we'll have the link to his email and his website and a way to subscribe.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate that very much. It's really, it's an ongoing, tremendous experience to be in touch with people that are coming here to make us more aware, let us say, and help us with our growth and our patterns and, our understanding of life in the universe and in the cosmos. And then it's just a marvelous, marvelous thing. And I've really been enjoying our stay here at the UFO Congress this year. I hope many people will place themselves in touch with others in this field, learn more about this field, learn more about space intelligence and UFOs.
I only have one final question. Do you feel like you were chosen somehow or another, or does everyone have this ability, or just certain people? Or I really don't quite understand channeling.
I think there's other individuals who are in contact with them and have developed a method of doing that. And I think it's an ongoing thing. And I think people are chosen. They say, first you choose us, then we choose you. To apples.
And you did show the interest in your story. You were talking about going out looking for the giant rock.
They say, to apples we salt, we return. That's the way they put it. In other words, the earth is the apple, and they've salted people here. Well, it's, incarnated, and they've suddenly gotten back into touch with him, in contact with him, just like the ham radio operator. So they want to get this information out to the public, because obviously, and it appears that our national administration, our governmental administration, doesn't apparently want to get this information out to the public. They've suppressed an awful lot of it, and I don't know, there may be good reasons, but I'm not sure what they are. But it is getting out to the public little by little by little, and that's a good thing.
Can you give me the name of your entity?
No, I'd rather not.
Oh, okay, fine. I'm just trying to get an exclusive here.
Well, because people, because people will pick it up and say, oh, I'll use that name, you see?
Okay,
and so
okay.
That's why I don't do that.
I get a little inside information here, Bob. I really enjoyed it all. Thank you very much. Bob Short.
If you're looking for adventure, information, and entertainment on the Internet, one stop fits all, jerrypippin.com. At jerrypippin.com, you'll find multimedia entertainment at its best. Almost 2 million people are enjoying hours of entertainment and information. Hit it now. www.jerrypippin.com.
You're a small business owner, but you're not advertising. You believe that the economy is still stagnant, that consumers are hanging on to their money. You think maybe you'll spend a little on advertising once things start to pick up, but you know what? By then, it'll be too late. Your competitors will already be advertising and taking a big fat chunk of your market share. You'll have totally missed the boat. The train will have left the station, and there you'll be standing all alone on the platform, watching slack-jawed as customers pass you by. Why? Because they don't know you're there, because you didn't advertise, because you didn't think it was worth it. Every moment of every day, someone is buying something. People are shopping right this second, making choices, making purchases, and if you're not talking to them, someone else is. Advertising greases the wheels of commerce, fuels the engines of economic expansion, connects consumers with companies and buyers with sellers. Advertising. It works. Your competitors know this. Why don't you? A message from the Radio Advertising Bureau, Adweek Magazine, this radio station, and the famous Radio Ranch.